Welcome back to another episode of This Is Why We Watch Movies. I'm your host, Brian Hutchins.
And I'm Landon Higgs.
And today we have a lot of fun stuff to talk about. I think the biggest thing is my confession that I forgot to bring a piece of chocolate for you this time.
I don't even know why I'm here. That's the only reason I was here. That's my payment for this.
I know. I made a mental note to grab a couple Hershey Kisses from the bin. I just didn't.
I think I might just walk out of this podcast.
Please don't. We have a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we actually do.
But as always, how has your day been?
Not bad. Class, and then came here. Wow. Oh, and a test. I did a test today.
Finally, something different happening.
Yeah, I did okay.
That's crazy. Well, there's no time to really waste when we talk about a film that could be considered a waste.
Well,
that's a spoiler.
Spoiler alert.
Today we're going to be talking about Sony's Madam Web, starring Dakota Johnson. I forgot to write down who directed this. Do you remember off the top of your head?
I can look it up real quick.
I think it's S.J. Clarkson, actually.
I think that sounds right. That sounds pretty close.
That sounds very correct to me.
Yeah.
When I think about it. But yeah, this was definitely a movie in the most broadest sense that you can think of.
Yeah, for sure.
As we start all reviews, though, I think we should talk about the positives for this movie.
Well, do you want to give a quick breakdown real quick?
Yeah, you take the breakdown, and then we'll go into the positives.
So you want me to tell people what this was about?
Yeah, just like a...
That would require me to know.
Well, you watched it.
Yes, but... All right, I'm just going to read the IMDb synopsis for this film.
Okay.
Cassandra Webb is a New York metropolis paramedic who begins to demonstrate signs of clairvoyance. Forced to challenge revelations about her past, she needs to safeguard three young women from a deadly adversary who wants to destroy them.
That is accurate, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Based on what I saw.
Yeah.
But yeah, what I really liked about this movie was it had a fun retro vibe, you know? It's set in 2003, and in a lot of ways it was like a Marvel movie that we would have gotten in 2003. Like... It had a lot more in common with Ben Affleck as Daredevil than it did with, you know, Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. So I liked that about it because it was fun to return to, like, that more kooky side of Marvel that we don't get to see so often.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I agree 100% on that. I don't ever want to see this. I know we're still kind of in positives, but let me... Yeah, I mean,
you share a positive before we go into that. Because okay. I have some issues with the setting, but I think it was fun.
Do you have another positive you want to share before I do? Because I have some positives.
I have several positives, actually.
Okay.
I thought Adam Scott and Sydney Sweeney were actually quite good in this. I could say that they were bright spots. They both had a charisma that exuberated that they wanted to be there, which I don't know if that can be said for other people, but we'll wait for the cons to talk about that.
Yeah. I agree with you about Adam Scott, though. I mentioned this after we left the movie, but, like, he just has, like, a natural, like, even if he didn't want to be there, he just looked like he did, you know? Unlike most people, he didn't, like, even if he was phoning this in, he didn't come across that way.
No, and I think some people are talented enough that they can phone it in and it not seem like they're phoning it in.
Yeah, he has, like, a level of, like, comfortability, like, as an actor. He does his thing.
One of his best roles is as the navigator on the USS Reliant in Star Trek First Contact.
Interesting.
He's in the movie for 30 seconds, and he's the one who's like, Worf, it's the Enterprise. They've come to save us. And that's it. Wow. And he was great.
Get that man an Oscar.
Yeah, best bit part.
But he's great in Severance. You should check that out. That one's great.
I've seen Severance.
It was more of a collective, you should check it out. Yeah, specifically you.
I was going to say, I was like, you think I haven't seen Severance? Come on. What's another positive?
So, I thought the soundtrack was fun.
That was my next one.
Yeah, the soundtrack was pretty good. I mean, for like the early 2000s music, you know, I was having a good time with it.
And even the stuff that wasn't exactly 2000s, that was late 90s, I believed this is something that Cassie Webb would be listening to.
Right.
Like, whether it's the Cranberries or the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, that kind of like... post-grunge indie sound that was in the soundtrack made sense. But even having, like, Karma by Britney there made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because I still hear that song not in movies, like, on people's playlists. I think the weirdest place I've ever seen that was in that episode of Doctor Who. It was the second episode with Christopher Eccleston. While the world is like exploding, they're listening to Karma by Britney Spears.
That's incredible.
I know.
That's such a Doctor Who thing to do, though. That makes sense.
Yeah. And it made sense, again, for her music to show up in like another B-level production almost. Like,
yeah.
But for sure. Anyhow, I have one more positive.
Me too.
What was yours?
I thought that the villain in the suit was pretty cool.
Dude, that's what I wrote down too.
Yeah. Okay. So we're basically just on the same page. But no, it's like
you might be a first time in podcast history.
Yeah, and you can go into it more here in a minute because you know more about it than I do. But you were explaining to me a lot of it was like originally planned as like a Terminator's kind of esque movie, and those scenes work when he's just like full tank mode coming at them. Like they work. If he has to open his mouth, it's a whole different game. But we can get to that in a minute.
Yeah, that'll be down yonder. But yeah, I thought that the action scenes, when they happened, at least the first two or three, were pretty cool. Particularly the one in the diner, which is in the trailer, and the one in the subway. And I think that's all I can really say about this movie without going into spoilers, which I think we will be talking spoilers in the cons. So if you don't want to hear spoilers, you can move ahead to the next timestamp for our top five list. But in the meantime, yeah, the action scenes that I just referenced, the entire thing was shown in the trailers. Mm-hmm. Like the scene in the diner is a great example of that, where all the action was shown and there was nothing else added. For those brief moments, it was cool. I think there's a shot of him like flipping Madame Web where the camera flips with her, and that was awesome to see. But then it just kind of goes away after that. The biggest con in this movie for me was actually not performance, but it was the cinematography. I also wrote down everything else aside from the pros that we mentioned, but
yeah.
You know, I think the way that it was shot, it's like, those people are loud. Very clearly, it was shot in like 6K or 8K, and they're doing digital camera shake, digital press-ins egregiously.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I this was interesting because I was looking into the director, and this director's actually directed an episode of Succession, which made the crash zooms kind of make a little more sense, because Succession does it all the time. But in Succession, I kind of enjoy it. I think it kind of works there.
Succession's a very different tone.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But like it was like, oh, okay. She probably got it doing it there and was like, I kind of like that. Let me do it for this movie.
It's the fact that they were added very clearly in post. Like, that was not a part of the plan.
Yeah. I watched a movie this week, and this is kind of a little bit off topic, but I just want to say this. It was one of the choppiest zooms I've ever seen, and it was in a movie called I Spit on Your Grave. And they were zooming out from this woman, like, who had just jumped in the water. And I was like, oh, my word. Like, it was crazy choppy zoom. I was like, this is insane. But anyway, back to Madame Web.
Back to Madame Web. I think the biggest problem with this movie is Dakota Johnson.
That's the biggest problem?
Well, the cinematography followed by Dakota Johnson.
Okay. I wrote a little thing that I would like to read.
Please.
This was my like very broad thoughts on the movie, and then we can get into specifics in a minute. But I wrote, this is a sloppy, half-baked idea that feels like no one involved cared. From the actors to the director, it felt phoned in. Characters feel lifeless and uninteresting, with no clear motivations. This feels like a movie made to get a more interesting story in the sequels. That's kind of like, that's the broad thing for this movie.
I wouldn't even say it was made to get a more interesting story in the sequels. I think it was made to cash in on the Marvel brand.
I think that the ending was very clearly like, this is what you came to see. Yeah. And we're going to give that to you in the next movie.
Yeah, which I don't think that's ever going to happen, unfortunately. But
no.
Weirder things have occurred, so I don't know. Yes,
but back to Dakota Johnson, because, yeah, she did not want to be... Like, she did not want to be here in the slightest.
It's blatantly obvious from her performance, but also even the press tour that she's been on. I saw someone on Twitter that commented, you don't get to sign on to play Madame Web and then spend your time acting like you're above playing Madame Web.
Right.
And that's kind of like the attitude that she's had about it. And I mean, I get it. The movie is lousy and it's probably not what she thought she was signing up for, but like, still, it's her. She's in it. She's the one who decided to be there.
So. Right. Yeah. No, I mean, this whole tour has been a disaster on all fronts. Yeah, because it's painfully obvious how much she disdains this movie, and she hasn't even seen it.
Right.
Like, she knew how bad it was from the time that she got done with it. Like, she has basically just been distancing herself the entire time. Like, she was even like, oh, yeah, the three girls, they had, like, their own little club. I was just kind of excluded from it. It's like, at least lie, you know? Like,
right.
Don't, you know, it's crazy.
Well, and, you know, from a filmmaking side of things, I do wonder if there was, like, tensions on set or, like, a negativity to it all.
I don't know if that's it, but, like, I think she just may just be, like, kind of a standoffish person in general.
That's fair.
Like, I don't want to make that generalization, but it's just, like, the way that she comes across interviews, and maybe it's just, like, an awkwardness about being interviewed, but, like, that's just, like, kind of how it came across to me.
I mean, I'm wearing, this is another side tangent, I'm wearing my Coldplay t-shirt because of this episode. For those of you that don't know, the lead singer of Coldplay has been dating Dakota Johnson for, I think, like, 4 or 5 years now. If you've listened to any of their more recent love anthems, they are about Dakota Johnson, specifically My Universe and Coloratura, which is kind of crazy, and I wish that the subject and object of the affection in Chris Martin's songs was someone else, which it's very harsh to say, but watching Madam Web, that's all I could think.
And I've seen her give good performances. I just feel like sometimes it's... when she doesn't want to be there, it's painful sometimes to watch her.
That's true.
So, like, that's kind of the big thing. But she's not the only one in the film that's giving a performance that way.
No.
It's most of the cast.
Most of the cast. And I think Tahar Rahim, the actor who
plays Ezekiel Sims.
Ezekiel Sims.
Yeah.
I had to look up how to pronounce his name, and then it ended up being pronounced exactly how I thought it was.
Yeah.
It's one of those names. But, like, he also has, like, a similar disposition within the film.
Well, they ADR'd him to death.
That's true.
Like, I mean, it was egregious. I don't like, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a lot of ADRs. And his line delivery was just abysmal.
Yeah, it was just, it was rough. Everything was so stilted, like.
Yeah, like when he's jumping around and, like, stalking them like the Terminator, it was good.
Yeah.
But then as soon as his mouth opens, it just got not good.
It also doesn't help the performances that the dialogue is just goofy.
It is a very goofy movie, yeah.
And every character, like, it just seems like the only thing that the characters do in this movie is, like, spit exposition at you. Like,
oh, yeah. Even Ezekiel just, like, spits out his plan to, like, the random lady he murders towards the beginning. And,
right.
You know, it's all, like, told to us. It's a definition of show, not tell. There is a group of students right outside the door of the studio today, and they are just loud.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I don't know how well it's going to come through on the recording end, but Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then speaking of phoning it in, and, you know, I think Adam Scott being maybe the one person who didn't fully do that.
Yeah.
I want to break down his character and what was happening. So if you haven't seen it or heard about this, Adam Scott is actually playing Ben Parker, as in Uncle Ben from the regular Spider-Man movies. And I don't really understand why he was in this version of the movie, because it really doesn't add anything.
Yeah.
Furthermore...
Oh, except for that one joke where Dakota Johnson's like, what, you've never been shot in Queens? It's like... I was like, come on.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
There was the thing about where he was talking about her not being responsible enough, and yeah, I was like, of course you would.
Oh, my word.
Spider-Man is technically in the movie because Mary Parker, played by Emma Roberts... I almost said Emma Stone, and I was like, wrong Emma. Is... Briefly in the movie, Madam Web even attends Peter Parker's baby shower. The funny thing is, he wouldn't be Peter Parker.
Hmm?
Was a bit, because in this version, Mary was Ben's sister.
Interesting.
Yeah, historically, Richard has been Ben's brother.
Oh, no. Let's just add this to, like, the mess that is this movie.
Yeah, but like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, they did say it was his sister. That makes no sense.
It doesn't, because, yeah. But I guess...
Unless Richard and Mary had the same last name before they got married.
No.
I'm just saying that's the only way to like write around this and explain it. There's no other way.
I didn't even think about that till just now.
Well, no, they're not going to have to now.
Yeah, like the sequel's not happening.
Right.
Let us be clear.
No, when they got married, you know, Ben was like, "You know what? This is my sister. I'm going to take his last name as well." You know?
What? No.
It all makes sense. It makes sense to me at least. I'm here for it.
And I mean, May is nowhere. I think that Richard being off on research made sense. I was like, "Okay, cool."
Yeah.
But Ben being a paramedic was an interesting choice for the lore that I don't think that's been seen before. Normally he's, I don't think they normally say what he does. In the original film, I think he was an electrician that got fired.
Yeah. He was like, he was unemployed, I think, at that point.
Yeah. Or he's normally retired because they're so much older, or because he's dead.
Yeah.
So that being part of it, is a ghost in the script almost from what you were talking about, because it essentially is trying to be a ripoff of Terminator set in a semi-Marvel world. From what I can tell, and the internet rumor mill, the original version of the script was Ezekiel trying to kill Spider-Man in the past before he grows up to be Spider-Man. Basically, Ezekiel is Terminator. John Connor is Spider-Man, and Madame Web would be Kyle Reese, I guess. And that is a much more interesting movie than what we got.
Yeah, if they would have fully committed to that, I would have been 100% here for it.
Yeah. And, I mean, they tried to do it where Ezekiel's trying to stop the three Spider-Women from defeating him in the future by killing them before they become Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work. There's too many characters. It's confusing. And it's never going to pay off.
And I may have forgiven it if, like, only the goals of Cassandra, right? Is that her name? What is her name?
Cassie.
Cassie, yeah. If her character would have been, had clear motivations and goals. But there was one point in the movie where she was like, "I've been mad at my mom this whole time."
And then the next minute forgives her.
No, and then I just looked over at him and I was like, Did they ever make any kind of like reference to her being mad at her mom? Because I don't remember it.
I mean, aside from at the baby shower when she's like, "My mom was dead," they never do that.
Yeah, but it was never like, "Oh, I'm mad at my mom for being dead." Like that just came out of nowhere and resolved itself within 3 minutes.
Yeah, no, it was like just such lazy writing. And also, she gets to deepest, darkest Peru and back to New York within what seems like 12 hours.
It felt like less than that. Yeah, it was like she left in the morning and got back at like 6 or 7 p.m.
Yeah, as one does.
Yeah, I was like, that's crazy. But no, this, I don't even know what to say right now because this is just crazy.
I think that this is an appropriate time to bring up the PlayStation Portable debacle, as I'm calling it.
Oh, yeah.
So the film is set in 2003. For those of us that are initiated fans of the PlayStation brand, I'll look up what the exact day was, but the PSP was introduced in December of 2004. So almost a full year and some change after this movie is supposed to be set. The reason that I'm bringing it up is someone on the subway, when the cool subway scene is about to happen, is playing on a PSP.
Yeah, my favorite is the video game dialogue that he hits her with, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, it's like he's an NPC or something.
It was 100% an NPC thing to say.
And my problem is that Sony is making this movie and blatantly just ignores continuity regarding time and a device that they present, like they built. And I get wanting to have, like, only Sony devices in a Sony movie, but really, like, that's bothersome to me on a fundamental level that they did not care enough to check that.
I didn't care, but, like, there was so many other things. Like, if the movie would have been better and I was, like, looking for something to nitpick, that may have been a thing. But to me, I didn't really care that much.
That's fair. My computer is mad at me.
I hear it, yeah.
It's crazy. But, yeah, it just keeps getting louder, it seems. There's not a lot of good stuff to say about this movie. It's just, it's misguided. It has echoes of what could have been a good film, but that's not enough at all.
Right, yeah.
It definitely makes me say, what the heck, Sony?
Yeah, I don't really know what they were doing here. Like, Sony can't figure it out for the life of them. They really can't.
That's true.
But
I mean, I've heard people say that this was better than, sorry, that Morbius was better than this.
I mean,
I don't know if I'd say that.
I'm not gonna argue with anybody who feels that way, because I don't care enough about either one of these films to like go out and fight for either one.
Yeah,
they both are bad. Let's just move on.
Right, like let's hope that Kraven the Hunter is better.
I forgot that was a thing.
You forgot that there's not one, not two, but three Spider-Man spinoff movies coming out this year?
Yeah, holy cow.
So in August we get Kraven the Hunter, and in November we get Venom 3. I forgot what the subtitle is. Yeah, so it's going to be a fun time. And I think it's an opportune time for Sony to be releasing Marvel-adjacent films, because the MCU is only putting out Deadpool this year. So
I mean,
DC is only doing Joker 2.
Yeah, this is a weird year.
It is.
I'm kind of excited for it, though. You know, I'm not excited for most of the comic book movies coming out this year, but,
no.
You know, I guess we'll see. I mean, Deadpool 3 might be good. I have hope in that one a little bit.
Yeah. Ever since they changed the title and, you know, now it's Deadpool and Wolverine, I think it has potential.
Yeah.
And what's funny is I mentioned the Fox movies and Ben Affleck's Daredevil. They're bringing back Jennifer Garner as Elektra in this.
Yeah. So you told me that. Yeah. I was, okay.
It's going to be connected. That means that Ben Affleck is canon, and it means I want to see Ben Affleck in it.
I mean, I'm here for it.
I don't think it'll ever happen.
No.
I want to see, like, a photo of him, because they own the rights to his likeness as Daredevil. Mm-hmm. So.
Make it happen, Marvel. Make it happen. Oh, that's awful.
That was terrible. I'm sorry I did that, listeners.
Listen, there's I feel like the audio in this one's going to be a little wild anyway. So
well, we have the people out the door. Yeah. My computer just decided to become a jet engine for some reason, and I only have two apps open.
Yeah, so I don't know. This week it may be okay. I think it'd be fine. But
I think that the audio is going to be better than last time.
Yeah.
Because we forgot to plug it in.
Yeah.
Or I forgot to plug it in.
Maybe it's just loud for us, and it'll be better on the. I don't know. I guess we'll see.
No, it's pretty loud. I'm looking at the waveform. Yeah, no, it's pretty loud. But yeah, so,
sorry.
Sorry, everyone. I also, last week I was coughing a bit. It turns out I had COVID and did not know it. This week, that was actually 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
I am feeling a lot better. I still have a little bit of a cough, and I'm drinking water. So if you hear like a weird suctiony noise, that's the Propel bottle. But yeah, I think that we should go ahead and wrap up Madam Web. What would you give it on a star rating?
I've been wrestling with this one, but I think it's probably a 1 out of 5.
Yeah, I was wrestling with whether or not it was a half or a 1, but the problem is I do think that there's some kernels of goodness in this film, and it feels too harsh to say it's a half star.
A very small amount of kernels of goodness, but yeah, I think 1 star feels like it's one of the lower scores I've ever given, but like...
Yeah, well, this is one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, there was multiple times where we just looked at each other baffled.
I laughed so much at the piss-poor filmmaking that at one point you looked at me and were like, you need to shut up so that the people in this room can enjoy it.
Yeah, well, okay. I don't think I said it that mean.
You were pretty mean.
I don't think I think I just leaned over and was like, hey, I think we should let the people who like this enjoy it.
I don't think anyone because liked it.
You'd be surprised. I think the people that go see 12 movies a year, and this is one of them, probably would enjoy it. Like, that's my thought on it. Like, I mean, there's critics who enjoyed it, so that, you know.
I mean, fair.
But
somewhere in the world, there's a child who's going to be like, Madam Web is my favorite superhero.
Right.
And
but that was my thing.
I pray for that child.
And again, I don't think I came. I don't think I like berated you in the theater.
No,
but
I'm overplaying it.
But I did. I did just be like, hey, I know this is terrible, like laughably bad, but there is people in here who probably will enjoy this movie, and let's not ruin the experience for them.
Every crash zoom, I was laughing in the opening scene.
Yeah, I mean, we just kept looking over at each other, like knowing, like there was a couple of, like it was just like there was an editing choice very early in the film that both of us just like. Just like we just stared at each other and kind of chuckled.
No, I don't think I've seen anything this bad outside of like student films in a very long time. Mm-hmm. And I say that, I mean, I make student films and I have friends that make student films. I've just seen some things, and usually it's like there's still works in progress. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this was legitimately bad. So,
yep. Sloppy. Well,
if you're interested in where we leave our one-star reviews, you can find the information for our Letterboxd accounts down in the description. And speaking of Letterboxd, we're going to continue our tradition of top five lists. Landon, what is our topic of the day?
Well, for President's Day this week, we decided to go with top five movies featuring presidents.
Nice.
Yeah.
I did know that. It seems like they just got louder as the laptop's quieting down.
I don't know what's happening. And then this thing over here is rattling.
I can't hear that.
I could. I don't
well,
know.
Well, anyways, enough about us.
Enough ranting about the audio quality. Let's just move on.
Maybe we should find a different podcast studio.
Well, can't really do that.
One that has chocolate.
Oh, my God.
I know. So, top five. What is your fifth place movie?
I'm actually going to start with a couple honorable mentions because I have quite a few this week that I just didn't feel like made the list. So the top one is just from my childhood, National Treasure 2, Book of Secrets.
Mm.
You know, that was all about the assassination of Lincoln. So that was a lot of fun. All the President's Men. And then two action movies, they weren't really for me, but I think some people might enjoy them, was White House Down, Olympus Has Fallen.
Okay, I can see that. I had two honorable mentions, which I'm scared that one of them might be in your list. The first one is a miniseries that came on, I think, A&E called The Kennedys with Greg Kinnear as JFK and Barry Pepper as Bobby Kennedy. That was a pretty all-inclusive portrait of the Kennedys. I think it was 10 episodes or something. I really enjoyed it at the time, but I haven't seen it in 12 years, so mm-hmm. I'm not going to put that in my top five list. And the other one is Spielberg's Lincoln, which I put into honorable mentions, and I'm almost positive it's on your list.
It is very much on my list, yeah.
Again, that's another one that I enjoyed, but I haven't seen it in 11 years, so...
It's been quite a few years. It hadn't been that long, but...
Yeah, it's just one of those movies where I enjoyed it, but I wouldn't put it as... Because perhaps I like action movies more than dramas.
That, yeah. But that's kind of where we differ, but yes, I think that...
Because you may have mentioned one that's already on my list.
I'm not surprised.
But anyways, what's your number five?
So my number five is an interesting one, and I think it could be a little controversial... Because overall, I think the film is, I don't know if it's hated, but I think that it's got mixed thoughts on it. But I picked the movie Vice, Adam McKay's scathing look at Dick Cheney, the vice president for George W. Bush. And I really love this movie, but I also hate Dick Cheney.
It's on my list, but it's not in fifth place. Should I wait to talk about it?
Kind
of ruins the order. I'll
just wait. Later. Yeah. But no, this is a lot of fun here. Gives you a good insight into politics at the time, and specifically Dick Cheney, who is a war criminal. But anyway.
Yeah, that's true. My number five is Vantage Point with Dennis Quaid and... They're so loud. What is this? I want to just go out there and yell at them, but I'm too nice of a person to do that. Yeah, so Vantage Point. Have you ever seen that one?
No.
Okay, so it's a movie from multiple perspectives. It's the same 15 minutes, and it follows a Secret Service agent who is, like, protecting the president and then, like, all the events leading up to the president's assassination. But every 15 minutes, it goes backwards in time, and it follows what all these characters are doing, whether they're a perpetrator or they're a different person or they're the president, and more layers of the story are unveiled until like somewhere around the hour 30 mark when you finally get the last 15 minutes after the assassination. Mm. So it all builds up to this point where all the stories intersect.
Interesting. This reminds me, and this will be very quick because it's another side tangent, but so there's a fantasy series that I'm reading written by Brandon Sanderson called The Stormlight Archive. And the prologue of each book is the day that a king was killed, but it's told from a different perspective each time, revealing more information. So that kind of feels familiar, and that's a really cool idea, because every time you get open like the next book, it's like, oh, we're getting a new layer to this like event,
right?
And we're seeing a lot more and getting a lot more information.
It's a similar situation to a few other movies that are told out of order, where it's not the most interesting story once it's all there, but I think it's the presentation that makes it interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What you got next?
So, you did. Okay, so my next one is another one that's kind of controversial. I don't know why I'm in a controversial mood today, but the number four is Oliver Stone's conspiratorial epic JFK. This is a three-hour movie about the JFK assassination and the conspiracy theories around it. It is bananas. Like, this movie is crazy, but I absolutely love it. And, like, I don't know, I texted my friend Quinn about it when I watched it, and I was like, just so many things I have to say. But if you're interested in an absolute bananas movie about the JFK assassination, this is the one.
I've actually not seen JFK, but it's been on my list for years. I know it's on Max.
It's just so long. It's hard to, like, commit to it. But when you start it, it's great. Kevin Costner's in it. So, you know, it's definitely a good time.
You know, it's kind of like me finding out that the Barack Obama biopic is on Max. So I guess I need to just go watch more presidential movies. Barry.
Oh, okay. It's on my list of things to see, but I didn't even know it existed until yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I almost watched it last night, but I instead watched John Oliver. But that's for a different day. My number four is Olympus Has Fallen / Angel Has Fallen. I don't really like London Has Fallen, but there's something endearing about Gerard Butler shooting people, and I'm here for it.
We talked about this, but I am more of a fan of, like, The White House Down, of those, like, two movies that came out at the same time that have the same plot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just find Channing Tatum quite charming. As a leading man, like, is he a great... I think he's put in some really good performances. But he has a charm that I don't find with Gerard Butler.
I mean, it could be argued that one of his best performances is Magic Mike. But...
Yeah. No, for sure.
I mean, I don't really like Channing Tatum. I'm definitely in the Gerard Butler camp. But that comes back to Phantom of the Opera. But not much needs to be said about Olympus Has Fallen. It's self-explanatory.
Yeah, Olympus Has Fallen.
That's true.
Yeah. So for my number three, I went with a movie that I have not seen in a really long time, since high school, actually. And I don't really remember all that much about it, but I remember, like, it affecting me whenever I watched it, was Lee Daniels, The Butler. It's about a butler who has worked for many presidents over many years and just kind of follows him. Again, I don't have too much to say because it's been a long time, but I think that one was worth checking out.
That's been on my list for years as well. It's just something I never got to. It seems like it might be appropriate to watch it soon, though, because President's Day and Black History Month. Double whammy right there.
Yeah.
My number three has Daddy in it.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if I've mentioned Daddy on the podcast yet.
I don't think you have.
So, dear listeners, in our apartment... One actor of the days of old is referred to as Daddy.
No, not in our apartment. By one person in our apartment.
And that person is me. And Daddy is Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
There are multiple photos of him around the apartment, hidden in different places, usually in posters. But Air Force One is the film, and the iconic line is, "Get off my plane."
Yeah.
And... there's really not much to say about it. It's a fun movie. It's a kooky movie. And I love Daddy.
Oh, my God. I watched Air Force One recently, and I'm trying to see what I gave it because I don't remember. I remember it's very forgettable, in my opinion. Like, I don't remember. I gave it 3 stars. Like, it was fine.
No, it's
like,
a fine movie. I want to just go back to the statement. I have not watched as many of the historical president movies as I thought I had.
Yeah.
So...
I don't know. Some of the people in the movie were making me laugh. Like, some of the cabinet members that were just like, "I'm going to do this thing." And then, like, they just die 3 seconds later. It was killing me.
Yeah.
Like, there's some really funny moments.
That's how it would be in real
life. Like, it's really funny moments in the movie, but, like, overall, it's just kind of forgettable. I don't remember much of, like, the action or anything in it.
I just remembered Daddy.
Of course you do.
What's your number two?
So, this is actually a director that we talk about quite frequently, basically because his movies are... very hit or miss for me, and that is Ron Howard. He directed a movie called Frost Nixon, about a famous interview with Nixon, basically, where they get Nixon to admit his crimes, and it is quite fascinating. It's got like a... I want to say it's like... it's got thriller elements to it, like in the lead up to the final thing. Almost like a sport, like a boxing movie, like in the final act, that like it gets you amped up for that final moment, and when it happens, you're like, yeah. I mean, spoiler alert, but like, it happened in real life.
I mean, yeah, I'm aware of what happened between Frost and Nixon, right? So,
but no, that's definitely one you should check out.
Yeah, that one and LBJ and JFK are all like up there on my list to watch. However, my number two is what we're on, right? Is Doctor Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb by Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah.
This movie is a farcical look at post-1950s nuclear fear.
Mm-hmm.
It stars Peter Sellers in three roles. I don't know why I'm talking like a robot. But it's a really funny movie. It has a bunch of visual gags, and it's Stanley Kubrick at his best, in my opinion. The pre-2001 Kubrick that had more of a sense of humor about his films.
Yeah. Wait, are you slandering 2001?
Yes. I know. The internet's going to come at me now.
Ooh.
But no, I really enjoy this movie. I think it's stupid, but it's funny stupid. Okay. And yeah, it's everything I would want.
Interesting. Interesting indeed. So I don't really have much to say about, I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen Doctor Strange?
No. It's one of the, like, so there's a few Kubricks that I haven't seen. It's Barry Lyndon, it's that, and then Lolita. Like, those are the three that, like, I should definitely see that I haven't.
I accidentally just microscopically burped into the microphone.
Oh.
Sorry.
But anyway, so.
But no, I'm like, dude, what? So I, you know what's funny is I actually own both Barry Lyndon and Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah, we're talking about doing that. We're watching. We're going to watch them at some point.
We should watch that soon.
Yeah.
Barry Lyndon's excellent.
I'm very excited for it.
Yeah. Well, what is your number one?
Well, we spoiled it a little bit earlier, but my number one is Lincoln.
Nice.
And this movie, you're never going to believe this, is about Abraham Lincoln.
Really?
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But,
and it stars, no. Stars Shia LaBeouf, right?
Oh. It stars one of the greatest living actors, directed by one of the greatest living directors, Steven Spielberg and Daniel Day-Lewis. I mean, what more to say, you know?
Yeah. No, Lincoln's a good time. I just, it's not on my list.
No, that's fair.
Yeah. My number one is Vice.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. I like it. I'm here for it.
I mean, I get that it's a controversial movie depending on what side of the political spectrum you fall on. But what I love about it is it presents everything from such a farcical standpoint, kind of like Dr. Strangelove almost, where it like plays up the stupidity and the absurdity of a lot of the stuff that was happening in the aughts. And Christian Bale's performance is really funny.
Yeah.
I can't think of a movie that teaches about history in a way, but also like keeping it fun on the same level. And again, like I'm fully aware that the movie is biased and is leaning in a particular direction, but you know that going in. So I don't think it should like affect your viewment of the film.
The movie doesn't lie to you.
No.
Like it's very upfront about what it's doing. But also, it's not hard to make Dick Cheney look bad.
No. I mean, it even opens with, we don't know that much about him, so we just filled in the gaps. And yeah. They tell you that. It's not trying to be historically accurate. It's trying to present Dick Cheney as a person. And what I love is that the film is presented with Jesse Plemons' character. That's his name, right? Jesse Plemons?
Oh.
He's the guy who looks like Matt Damon. It's not Matt Damon.
Okay, yeah, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. So he is a soldier who is narrating the film for most of it. And in the last 10 minutes of the movie, he's hit by a van and his heart is transplanted into Dick Cheney.
That's right, yes.
And so in the final monologue of the film, Dick Cheney becomes the narrator because that guy's heart is inside of him. And then he's like, he just directly addresses the viewer for the first time and says, did I do anything wrong? Because I tried to protect you. And I think that to me was interesting, that it's almost Shakespearean in scale, where you have, like, at the end, he's come back and he's like, what do you think about what I did? And I love that the film asks the question instead of telling us what to think.
I love Adam McKay. I think that, like, his, like, I guess level of, like, I guess satire is the word. I find it very fascinating. And every time he has a movie come out, it's going to be divisive.
Yeah.
Because he's not making a movie to just, like, you know, toe the line. He's gonna step way over it. Like, intentionally. Like, the point is to get a rise out of you.
Right, and Don't Look Up is a great example of that.
Yeah.
I don't really like his earlier stuff, like Anchorman or Talladega Nights, but I like what he's been doing here recently.
Yeah. I don't like Don't Look Up nearly as much as Vice, but I love Vice. I think Vice is very good.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a watch, shall we say. Yeah. But that was our top five movies about presidents, and now we're going to talk about what we've been watching. So,
yeah, there's 2 weeks worth of stuff, so there's quite a bit to get through.
That is so much. Wow.
So, let me think. When was the last day we were here?
It was 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so it was the...
It
would have been like the 7th or 8th.
I think. Yeah.
So, in the time since we've left... I have watched a short film called Nay, which is okay. And then I got into like a weird space where I was watching controversial movies, revolving around faith. So I watched, Scorsese's Silence and The Last Temptation of Christ, which I enjoyed both of those a lot. I watched a film for class called The Goddess. It is a Chinese silent film from, the 30s. I highly recommend it. It's a melodrama. And then I watched The Teacher's Lounge, which is Germany's selection for the Academy Awards this year that has been nominated for Best Foreign Film. I've watched Dune in IMAX twice.
Yeah, that was my first thing I did out of COVID quarantine was I went and watched Dune in IMAX. Yeah. Fantastic.
Then I watched Gangs of New York. It's okay. Then I watched, for class, I had to watch a Nazi propaganda film. Was the worst thing I've ever seen. And then I watched Night and Fog, a documentary about the Holocaust. And it was probably one of the best things I've ever seen. It was a really hard watch. It affected me for a day and a half, probably. And then I watched Angels and Demons. Somebody convinced me to do that.
Don't know who.
Yeah, I can't imagine who would have convinced me to watch Angels and Demons.
It's not as bad as you'd think.
Then we watched When Harry Met Sally. And then for class, I watched Bicycle Thieves. Madam Web, obviously. I watched two new rom-coms from 2024, Upgraded and Players. Both of them were 2.5 stars, not very good. I watched I Spit on Your Grave, talked about that already. And then I watched a couple of Rachel McAdams romance films. I watched The Vow and About Time. About Time is brilliant.
I don't disagree on that.
I absolutely love that. And then I watched All That Heaven Allows, and I was telling him this movie made me miss Technicolor so bad. The colors in this movie were popping like crazy, and I was like, man, somebody needs to bring that back. I know it's like, you know, super expensive and nobody's gonna do it, but somebody needs to do it. And then we watched You've Got Mail, and then last night I watched Plus One.
Dude, like the movie with that person.
Jack Quaid.
I didn't like that one. I watched.
I know. I noticed you didn't.
I can. Do you have it on DVD?
No. It's on Netflix.
Well, if you'd like a DVD, I was gonna throw mine out.
I mean, I'll take it.
By throw it out, I mean take it to McKay's. But anyways, I keep hitting that. Jeez. Yeah. So I had COVID, and I was in quarantine. So, a few of the things that you've mentioned, I also watched. But I spent most of it watching Friends. I'm almost done with the first season. I'd never seen it before. It's okay. You know, it's a sitcom. I really like Ross. I feel like he's basically me. And I watched all three of the Fantastic Four films that came out 10 and 20 years ago, respectively. The second one, Rise of the Silver Surfer, is probably the best out of the bunch. And I'd never seen Fantastic, the Josh Trank movie, and I didn't think it was as bad as the internet had led me to believe. So I'm glad I finally watched it. I checked out some Mr. Bean episodes. I've already seen Mr. Bean, which you severely dislike, but I've been watching the show, and then I watched the movie for the first time in a long time, I didn't like the movie. Either time I've watched it. And there was something else mixed in there aside from Dune, but I think the big thing has been the Meg Ryan comedies.
Yeah.
That sat with me. I mean, that, and then after you had such a reaction to Night and Fog, I wouldn't watch that as well. Mm-hmm. I think that should just be required watching in general. It was very powerful.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been.
If you do watch it, just be warned. It is very.
It's extremely graphic.
It's extremely graphic, yeah. So just be warned. But it is on Max, right?
Yeah, it's on Max.
Yeah. So if you got Max, check it out.
It's one of those things where it's so affecting, but it's because of how graphic it is. And if you're not in the headspace to encounter that level of gruesomeness, then I cannot recommend watching it.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, if you're not in the headspace, please don't watch it. But also, it's only like, what, 30
minutes.
Yeah, 30-ish minutes. So 35. So while it is tough to get through, it does end. You know, it doesn't make you sit there for an hour and a half. It, you know, which it could have been way harder to get through if that was the case.
Yeah, I think what was interesting is in terms of what it shows and communicates about the Holocaust, it's, I don't want to say it's more efficient than something like Schindler's List or Jojo Rabbit, but those are relatively easy to watch because you're not directly seeing it happen.
Yeah.
Like, there are moments of it, but it's always like, you know, it's fake. Like, Scarlett Johansson's not dead. But then to actually see the victims and the aftermath is just heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
But again, I think that everyone should watch it at a point that you're in the correct headspace to do so.
For sure.
And I also think everyone should watch When Harry Met Sally when they're in the correct headspace to do so.
That one's a little easier. The headspace can be a little bit, you know, varying on that.
Yeah, we went for Valentine's.
Yeah, Valentine's Day. Yeah, no, I loved it. I mean, I have, you know, this is one of my favorites. I have it in my top 100 films of all time.
You know, I tried to make a top 100 films of all time list one time just to annoy you. And
It didn't annoy me. I was excited to see it.
I put some things particularly high on purpose.
Yeah, but we already talked about that. But,
yeah. But Nacho Libre.
But that one I don't think you're even joking about at this point.
No, it really is that high on my list.
But, I mean,
yeah, I think it's a fun time. I think that I've kind of slept on the Meg Ryan comedies, circling back from Holocaust to Meg Ryan. I think I watched Sleepless in Seattle for the first time over December or Thanksgiving, one or the other. So I'm kind of a fan now.
Yeah, she's great. I mean, those rom-coms are great. Like, I mean, even the ones that are not as good, like You've Got Mail, I still have a great time with. I think that her and Tom Hanks have enough, like, charm to make the movie work.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely going to check out Gideon Leopold next, because that is James Mangold, right?
I think so.
Yeah, it's kind of early James Mangold, which is crazy that he went from that to Indiana Jones.
That was the most disappointing thing because I like a lot of his films. I think that he's made a lot of great things. And then I was like, okay, if there's somebody who can do it, I think he's a guy that can make a good Indiana Jones film. He didn't.
I mean, I think to me personally, the only thing he's made that I'm disappointed by is probably the first Wolverine movie he did.
I like most of that.
Yeah, like I like most of it, but it's disappointing in a lot of ways.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I mean, and like I liked Dial of Destiny, but that doesn't mean I love Dial of Destiny. It's very much so just a movie.
Right.
But I think what's more interesting is that this week, part of the reason I haven't had as many watches is because I started playing video games again. It's been a while since I did that. Apparently Madden is fun. Like, who knew?
Yeah, who knew? It's almost like I've been doing this for decades.
Wow, you're old.
I know.
But yeah, I think that'll about do it for this episode. We'll be watching something else next week and coming back and talking about it.
Yeah.
Just like normal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have anything to add?
Bring back Technicolor.